You're listening to a New Dimensions Media podcast. New Dimensions Media, communicating the wisdom that's changing the world.
Hello, I'm Michael Toms. Welcome to the New Dimensions Cafe. Today I'm hosting Rick Hansen. Rick Hansen is a neuropsychologist and meditation teacher, a summa cum laude graduate of the University of California, Los Angeles. He co-founded the Wellspring Institute for Neuroscience and Contemplative Wisdom, and he edits the Wise Brain Bulletin. He's the co-author with Richard Mendius of Buddha's Brain, the Practical Neuroscience of Happiness, Love, and Wisdom. Rick, welcome to the New Dimensions Cafe.
Thank you.
Rick, as someone who's familiar with other cultures and has traveled the planet and doing the work you've been doing for some decades now, I'm wondering from your perspective how you see the current ever-changing, ever-morphing worldscape in this moment in time. What do you see?
Well, that's a real easy question. I think of the world as, honestly, promise and peril. I mean, the promise is, globally intertwining communities of information. Right now, there's a slowly moving revolution occurring in Iran that's being driven by people with cell phones taking pictures and uploading, what they're seeing there, as an example. Lots of other positive trends as well. On the other hand, we're starting to run out of resources. We're going to hit peak oil pretty soon if we haven't already. The world's getting hotter. Nuclear weapons are proliferating. And when people feel increasingly threatened, they start acting out in ways that can be, often quite catastrophic. So that's what I see. And I think it's really important as we face that worldscape looking ahead that we don't lose sight of the sense of promise and not get manipulated into a sense of learned helplessness, because government forces love manipulating the populace into a sense of learned helplessness, which that's a scientific term actually in psychology, learned helplessness. Bottom line is that mammals like us, dogs and humans alike, are very vulnerable to learning to feel that there's a sense of futility. And so why bother? Conserve resources, get through the day. And that's a great way to create a willing populace or a willing consumer base who just consumes, gets their bread in circuses, and then lets government do whatever the heck it does, aided by the wealthy elites. And so I think it's very important to not get sucked into that sense of learned helplessness and to wake up from the paranoid trance. That's the legacy of evolution, biological evolution that wants us to, we would rather have us make a mistake and think there's a tiger 99 times when there's really no tiger than to make that one mistake when there is a tiger and we missed it. So we often walk around in a sense of a kind of paranoid trance with limited sense of our own capabilities or how the world could be. So I think it's really important to not lose sight of our own capacities, our own natural goodness. For many people, I'm a practicing therapist, the hardest thing for them to accept and to access and to live from is their own goodness, their own natural goodness. Not in any kind of airy-fairy lofty sense, but, their own natural, fundamentally benign orientation toward the world when they're not in pain and they're not threatened and they're not upset and they're not chemically disturbed, and their own clear seeing and their own desire to make the world a better place. And B, to see out there in the world that so many people that seem superficially like them are actually really at a deeper level just us. I mean, we are so joined in this, world together. It's interesting that as we evolved in these separate hominid bands that interbred mainly within the band, bands, could survive and flourish and pass on their genes by overwhelming other bands. Ultimately, for example, as we were talking earlier, like Cro-Magnon man and woman, obviously, overran the Neanderthals. But today, we can't live in that way anymore, because if we overrun them, we've really ultimately overrun ourselves. And so those two things, one, a sense of the goodness in each person, including within ourselves, and not losing sight of that in a sense of despair or futility. And second, being very attentive to how these seeming divisions between us and them are ultimately arbitrary. I mean, yes, to some extent we have to manage them, and we don't want to let them harm us. There's a place for that, I think, and having your eyes wide open about that. But so many of those distinctions between us and them are driven by this paranoid trance and are ultimately self-destructive.
There are many people, at least some people, who feel as, again, because we're surrounded with the media, both print and electronic, and so many other forms as well, billboards, that remind us, you know, how difficult it is. And I wonder what you have to say to people who feel like that as small, as little individuals, what can they do to change things? What can they? You mentioned early about the eco challenges that we face. And what do you have to say to people that feel like, you know, what can I do? I mean, that's such a huge thing. I mean, what about that?
It's funny. I mean, it's a cliche, but things become cliches because they're profoundly true. Think globally, act locally. In other words, most of us, truthfully, are going to have local effects. Now, those local effects can ripple through hundreds, even thousands of people, particularly, for example, with the internet. If people start communicating about something, you just really have no idea when it goes viral. You know, what you write or what you say or the song you sing can, you know, how widely it truly can spread. The powerful takeaway for me when I've learned more and more about the brain was to really appreciate its plasticity. That's a fancy term in neuroscience, plasticity, which means essentially that the brain can change itself. You know, the mind can change the brain over time. When you really appreciate that, you start to realize that honestly, by doing little things, really little things, like exhaling instead of holding your breath when you're in a tense situation, or focusing and keeping your attention on some positive experience for 30 seconds rather than 1 or 2 seconds as it kind of flows through your head. As you do those small little things, you do them repeatedly, day after day after day after day after day, within weeks and certainly within months and years, you truly can transform yourself. There's a Tibetan saying, you probably know it, you know, if you take care of the minutes, the years will take care of themselves. And all around us are all kinds of minutes to take care of locally. You know, if we take care of the minutes inside our own minds, and if we take care of the minutes in the ways that we treat other people, so that instead of feeling unnecessarily threatened by them, we can see that they really are not there to harm us, or that they're afflicted themselves in the moment by whatever it is that's upsetting them. When we do that, we actually create a kind of contagion effect. You know, we are so interlinked neurologically as deeply, deeply social animals. We're the most social animals on the planet. Then when we treat each other well, it literally is, as Dan Goleman says, a kind of neural Wi-Fi. We radiate a communication which then entrains the brains of those people around us, who then entrain others in a way that ultimately can change the world. And I think it's important to not be, you know, foolish about that or overly Pollyanna-ish, et cetera. There's a lot of real work to be done. But, you know, don't lose heart. I mean, that's if you want to get a, you know, a population that just sits around with bread and circuses, you know, trick them into losing heart. And that's the one thing that, you know, you don't have to do. So take heart and give heart and don't lose heart.
Recognizing that none of us can predict the future, we really don't know what's going to happen next in the next moment. But given that, if we were to fast forward to the year 2020 and you had all your druthers, no obstacles, what would you like to see the world be like in 2020?
Well, it's 10 years from now, in other words. I'll answer that question in two steps. I mean, what I'd like to see and what I think is the realistically possible good thing that could happen. What I'd like to see is a sense of, I'd like to see humanity come into its adulthood in the sense of accepting its stewardship for the next generation. In other words, if policy decisions ran through the filter of what's best for the kids in terms of the next generation and what's best really for our kids' kids, then I think this world would become a better place. It's very interesting that in evolution, in most animals, grandparents are irrelevant. But in the human species, grandparents promote the survival of the young as we evolved in the Serengeti. And I think that that's one of the evolutionary bases for example, menopause, which is very unusual. Most mammal species don't have menopause. And also potentially for the differential in the natural lifespan of males versus females. Grandmothers who can take care of the young are really useful in the Serengeti, but grandfathers who can no longer hunt may not be so useful in terms of promoting, you know, gene copies and passing along. In other words, innate in our own biology is an appreciation, is a kind of generational wisdom, is a recognition of the importance of keeping grandchildren alive and helping them not simply survive but thrive. And I'd love to see that as a kind of global recognition that's morally rooted but fundamentally rooted in enlightened self-interest, the sense of stewardship, you know, for the third generation. I think that would transform the planet. Realistically, obviously, I'd like to see some kind of growing accord related to global warming. I think that's critically important. I'd like to see a growing movement away from governments and toward populations. I think, you know, we're going through a transitional stage. I mean, I don't offer this as a professional. It's a personal opinion here. But I think we're going through a transitional stage where we're moving beyond nation states. We're starting to recognize that the nation state, how can I put it, that a people is not its government. And even just the way language is used, it's very interesting in the newspaper. You read that, you know, Washington went to war. Well, it's the American people, all 300 million of them plus. Did they all go to war? So I'm very interested in the notion of promoting the power of the individual, you know, kind of like the analogy I gave earlier of mammals, you know, these little rat-like ancestors, little squirrels running around Jurassic Park, dodging dinosaurs, who ultimately, you know, kind of overcame and rose to the top of the food chain in the form of human beings. I'm really for the idea of people power and distributing. That's like what New Dimensions does and what I try to do on my website and my book is, and Stuart Brand and other people, for example, the democratization of access to tools, I think, is incredibly important in the world at large and will help make this world a better place.
Rick, I want to thank you for being with us on the New Dimensions Cafe.
Thank you.
I've been speaking with Rick Hansen, and he's the author of Buddha's Brain, the Practical Neuroscience of Happiness, Love, and Wisdom. And if you'd like more information about his work, you can go to the website buddhasbrain.com. That's buddhasbrain.com. You can also get there through the New Dimensions website, newdimensions.org. And I want to thank all of you for joining us at the New Dimensions Cafe. My name is Michael Toms. Please come back again. And don't forget to do something good out there.
This has been the New Dimensions Media Podcast. We'd love to hear from you. Please send your comments and suggestions to info@newdimensions.org or go to our website, newdimensions.org, to enjoy other New Dimensions programs and to listen to New Dimensions Internet Radio, the internet radio home of New Dimensions Media.